So, after going through the days of unleavened bread, still we are in that season. We are only one day past, as we know. And so the subject that I'm going to be giving today is striving against sin. Of course, we've had that type of sermon. No matter which sermon it is, we strive against sin. But what we're going to take a look at today is where sin comes from. Do we recognize its origin? Do we really recognize its origin? Do we know where it begins? Do we know where it actually begins? So when I sin, can I trace it back? It has a genealogy, Genesis. It has a beginning. So where did it begin when I actually do sin? And then, do we know really how we're delivered from it? Paul had something to say about that in the book of Romans. And then the last question is, are we really striving against it? Are we striving against it? So when we take a look at Israel, we realize that God delivered them from a way of life. I may have mentioned this. I forget everything that I've said during the days of unleavened bread, but of course you've heard it in the past and you know the book and what the book stands for. It's called the book of Exodus. And it is interesting. You have Genesis and then you have Exodus. And Exodus is all about coming out of sin, isn't it? This is what the entire book really is about. Coming out of sin. Exiting sin. And what they exited was an entire way of life. An entire way of life. When I went to Ambassador College, I didn't know a lot. In fact, just to show you what I knew, I expected when I went to Ambassador College that the first service would be going to a small little church someplace of about 100, and it would be white, and it would have this really nice steeple. That's how much I knew. I really thought in my mind's image, you know, before you ever get someplace, you have an image of maybe, well, if you've heard a voice, you might think, what does a person look like? Well, I hadn't heard any voice, actually. I think I've told some of you that I never heard the voice of Mr. Armstrong or Garner Ted Armstrong or anybody else in the church until I arrived at Ambassador College. I had the correspondence course and I had the plain truth and quite a few booklets, which were all very beneficial. But you have these images. And I did know, though, that the word church itself meant people. So when I heard, when I was washing some windows, I was on the janitorial crew, and I was washing some windows, and I heard a couple evangelist wives say, what are you going to wear to church? Because I was outside washing their windows, and it was open because I was getting the inside and outside. And I thought, what do they mean, going to church? Maybe I'd been there for a month by that time because I always thought church was a building. But then I found out the church is the people. And then they were talking about, what are we going to wear to church? And I thought, they're not going to wear anything to church. They're the people. They are the church. What is the church going to wear to? What do we say? But anyway, we have these ideas, don't we? So I didn't know a lot at all, but as time goes by, of course, we learn. But I actually went to college for 1 year, and then after 1 year, I went back home to work. And that's all I was going to do, is go back for the 3 months. And I'd been baptized by that time. I'd been baptized the previous March. And then June, I went to Montana. And after 1 week, as I look back, I was already being pulled in by my culture. I was being pulled in because I was around the same people that I had left. This was around, in fact, I went to church, the Lutheran church. I only went once, and that's all I intended to go. In fact, that's why I left Chinook, Montana after a week and a half, even though I was going to stay there 3 months. My mom wanted me to go to church the second week, and I wasn't about to go to church the second week. I already had all the material I needed for a speech at Ambassador College on the Lutheran church. That's why I went there. But whatever the case, I knew after a week that I was being affected. And I was starting to already, sin, I guess. You know, you can say, well, I was being affected and I was being pulled in a little bit, but I was beginning to sin by breaking the Sabbath. A couple hours, but I was already in the culture and I was already sucked in. I was already influenced by that culture. So the culture is so important, and this is why I go to the first point of exiting out of the culture. Exodus has a good meaning, and for all of us, we have to take a look at this for a few moments and ask ourselves if we are exiting out of the culture that has contributed to sin. Now, I might mention in all of this, Paul did say, look, you're not going to come out of the world. That is, you're in the world. You're not going to be taken and put in a cave. You just can't be of the world. I think all of us know that. And there is a difference. We're still going to, like Daniel, like Esther, like Mordecai, we're still going to be around the pagan world in which we live. We just will be. And we're supposed to be lights in that world. But we must come out of her, my people. That is the sin, is what God is talking about. So in Romans 12 and verse 2, Romans 12, chapter 2. I always learned that this was the Christian living chapter. Romans 12 and verse 2. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, this is starting out in verse 1, that we present our bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is our reasonable service. So a Christian life is a sacrifice. It just really is. And don't be conformed. So this is where he goes now. It's a living sacrifice is what we are. But let's not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. So our admonition is to not conform to our culture, to the world, the age in which we live, but we want to be transformed. I think all of us know what that word trans means. We have transatlantic, transcontinental. We're going across. We're coming from one point and we're going towards another point. I believe in Colossians, maybe the first chapter, it says that we've been transferred basically from the kingdom of Satan, the devil, that realm, into the world run by God's Spirit, I guess we would say. So we're being transformed and we have a mind that is renewed. And this is where, of course, God starts. There's a program called Criminal Minds that we don't watch, but we've seen the introduction, and I thought when I heard the introduction, it was very good because it states that all criminal activity, all wickedness, everything that is bad starts in the mind. I don't know if you've seen the introduction to it, but I thought, boy, that's right on. Everything starts in the mind. And we'll come to that here in a little bit because we want to come back to what the problem, where sin starts. But of course, we do know it starts in the mind. So we have to renew our mind. Now, as we look at this, and as we desire to strive against sin, we want to think, what was my mind like when I first was baptized and before? And what is my mind like right now? Because we're renewing our mind. Now, if you were like me, I didn't pay too much attention to what my mind was like. I really didn't. As a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17, even when I was reading The Plain Truth at the age of 16, I didn't pay too much attention at all. And I was raised in a religious world. I went to Sunday school every week and church and Bible school in the summer. I went to it all and enjoyed it except for one teacher I didn't like. So she's probably the only teacher that learned me something. taught me something, you know, that is. But anyway, it was, you know, sang in the church choir, very much involved. But none of that had anything to do with my life. I mean, you mean church has something to do with the way you live? That never hit me one bit. Not one bit. Now, I was young, and I'm not saying that's the way it is with everybody, because as a person matures and hits their 20s and into their mid-20s and maybe 30s, they definitely will give a little bit more thought to life. But for me, you know, church had nothing to do. In fact, Christmas, I knew it was pagan, but it had nothing to do with me keeping it. So I read the booklet, passed it around, but as far as, you mean I'm not supposed to keep it? Well, I know it's pagan. Isn't that good enough, right? Easter? Well, so it's a matter of mind renewal. God wants us to actually renew the way we think. Because remember, all of us are going to have our thoughts, do have our thoughts, monitored by God. He is listening in. For the good, it's not for the bad. God is not out to get us at all. God wants to convict us of what's in our mind and help us change. But still, we have to think in terms of changing, renewing, becoming different. On a yearly basis, on a monthly basis, on a daily basis, we want to be thinking of being different. What can I do better than yesterday? How can I bring my thoughts into captivity? I've got a mind here that needs to be renewed. And then it goes on to say that we may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Because sometimes we think our mind is fine, the way we're thinking is fine, and then it takes time to be convicted that, no, the way I'm thinking is not so fine, not so good. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, if we're going to have that renewed mind, we have to take a look at our environment. We absolutely must. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. Don't be deceived. It's the company that you keep that corrupts you. Let's not be deceived. It's the company we keep that corrupts us. Now, that's not all that corrupts us, but I suppose when you think about from the time we're born and the influence that we have, it is the company in one sense. It's our parents, first of all. Not so bad. They love us. Most of the time, you know, it's pretty good, but still I have something to say about that here shortly. But still, we have to be careful. We have to be thinking, am I in Egypt? Is this what God calls Egypt? Is the program that I'm watching called Egypt? The friends that I have, would I call them Egypt? Maybe not. Again, if they're not influencing us, we have friends in the world, and there can be people whom we influence more than they influence us, right? There can be. But we will know. You know, I've listened to talk radio and gotten in a bad attitude. Have you? Don't listen to politics, whatever you do. I know we're all Democrats in this room. So don't listen to Republicans talking against the Democrats. Just, that is something. Probably if we did vote, we would be Republicans. Overall, that's what you would have in the church. Although I have met a couple of people who said, you know, if I were in the world, I'd be probably a Democrat. And of course, that's like raising the ire in the back of our neck, like, what? You would be a what? So all I say is, which side of the rotten fence are we going to be on? It doesn't really matter, does it? It's like we're waiting for the kingdom of God. There's so many problems on both sides. There just is. We just throw our hands up and still say, God, your kingdom come, because no party is going to solve anything. Of course, we have a libertarian coming up. Maybe he is God's salvation to mankind. You think? I don't think so. And you have to be presidential to be a president, even if you have nothing within the mind. And I'm not talking about anybody in particular, but you still have to look presidential to become a president, right? I would think. Because it's like the old, the fellow in New Jersey who said, paint, paint, make it look like it ain't. You ever heard that one? It's like putting lipstick on a pig to make it look better so that you'll like it. I saw that expression the other day somewhere, and I thought, that is a good expression, isn't it? But in this world, that's what people do. That's about all. But here we want to take serious concern about who's around us and who influences us. Like I say, I've listened to talk programs, and I've been in a bad attitude. I didn't know I was going to be in a bad attitude, but listening to even NPR, of course, it's a little bit more liberal, some have said, but I'll listen to some programs in the car, and I'll get out, and I'm thinking, well, why do I feel irritated? Well, if something makes me irritated, that's not good. There should be things that irritate us, but not that stick with us where we can't control it and where we can't have peace of mind and it just weighs on us. That is totally different. We should be able to make judgments. We can listen, but we have to be careful that we are not influenced to sin, where something makes us strike out at someone else and they're not the problem. That would be a problem. So here, again, don't be deceived. Evil company is a major problem. The Israelites were tremendously influenced by the Egyptians, slowly but surely. When Joseph was there, the land of Goshen no doubt was keeping the holy days. But within 200 years, you know they weren't. They were following their images, their Baals, their idols, and that's what they were doing. So I ask myself, what is different about my environment? I have a good environment, but still there's parts of my environment that I have to control. So what is it about my environment that is affecting me? Now I have a question for all who are raised in the church, because we have quite a few who are raised in the church as I look around. And we ask ourselves, well, you know, I had the environment of my parents. Now we have to ask ourselves, were my parents totally converted? Did they do everything right? Now, Mark can't shake his head one way or the other. He'll get in trouble. Oh, you better go like this, Mark. We all know that parents in the church, and when we're born, they were probably new in the church. In one way or the other, even if we had grandparents in the church, we know that they hadn't overcome everything. And so we can ask ourselves, are we following some of their bad habits that they hadn't overcome at the time? So my wife and I had two children by the time we were 25, 26, whatever it was. And we hadn't overcome everything. You know, we were still impatient at times with them. We were upset when we shouldn't be. We yelled a few times at them when we shouldn't. We did not give them a 100% good example. So we ask ourselves, are we following the bad side of our parents, some of their bad points when they were young, and probably have overcome those points? So we have to ask ourselves, well, my parents were in the church, I'm just doing what they were doing, so it's their fault. No, we all have to overcome. It doesn't matter. To the end of time, if every family and all our kids stayed in the church from the time of 31 AD, everybody that God called, there'd be a billion people probably on this earth in the church, but still every generation has its overcoming to do. We all have a reward based on our overcoming, don't we? So again, our culture, even in the church, it's not going to be perfect. We still have to overcome some of the things that our parents hadn't overcome. And we have to look at it that way. So what was in our past that we must exodus? What was in our past that we must exodus? I was out last night, or we were out with a couple last night, and we were talking about these red buttons, or the chips that we have. And sometimes we're very sensitive. If we have a sensitivity, very sensitive, and I've got them, sometimes you don't know you have them. You don't know you have them until someone, you know, tips it off the shoulder or someone hits it. You just don't know. How can we know that we've got a really sensitive spot unless we're tried? Well, God tries us in every which way. And so when you are single, you may not know you're sensitive about something, and then you get married and your husband says something or the wife says something and oops, there's a spot. We didn't know we had it. Came from our background. We brought it into the marriage, didn't realize it. And it's like, ooh, what do I have here? I have maybe my mom that's affecting me. Maybe my dad who's affecting me. You know, why am I sensitive about this? I still remember when Marion and I were visiting my mom and dad, and my dad was around, and Marion, I was going to go out with my dad, who loved to get his hands dirty. He was a welder, and then he bought a franchise, Coast to Coast store, and he couldn't stay clean. He had to get dirty, my mother said, every single day. Had to get his hands dirty. Well, he worked in a coal mine till he was 25. That'll tell you something, too. But anyway, Marion said, Greg, are you going to wear that shirt? And my dad said, if he wants to wear that shirt, you let him wear that shirt. And my wife went like this. Now, but that was my dad. And do you think that he had a sensitivity? Do you think my dad was sensitive about something? Do you think somebody hit his red button? It wasn't Marion that hit his red button. Well, I guess maybe in the sense that he loved my wife. He had nothing against my wife. But those types of things come up. Now we ask ourselves, so why am I so sensitive? There's something in my background. We all have them. We all have them. Right? Well, if you don't, that's great. I'm glad if you don't. And I'm not saying you have to have them. So if you really don't have them, that's okay. But we do recognize them when they come up, don't they? And they're there. And then we say, well, should I be that sensitive? And, well, we can still be sensitive, but then we have to have self-control, don't we? We have to have self-control. So what do we need to still exit that's in our past? What do we need to exit? Am I still influenced by Egypt? God's way is overcoming. God's way is overcoming. What the world does in order to boost themselves up is not to overcome, but to come over others, I guess we would say, by pointing fingers. You know, if we can make somebody look worse than we are, then we are better than they are. And God never judges that way. He always judges based on what we personally overcome. You know, I've always said that if someone is acting so poorly that they're going to go to hellfire, why should we join them by doing something wrong ourselves and saying, I'm not quite as bad as they are? You know, will the fire be just a little bit less hot? And of course, we know that's foolishness. So let's make sure that we are in the world, but we are not of the world. Let's make sure that we really monitor our environment. Okay, secondly, sin begins with what? Sin begins with, let's go to James. Now, I know there's an old saying, the devil made me do it. But the devil can't make us do anything that we don't want to do, for sure. So James 1 and verse 13 tells us why we actually end up sinning. James 1 and verse 13. Let no one say when he's tempted, I'm tempted of God. So we know for sure God doesn't tempt. God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. Now that does tell us too that it's evil that is the problem here that we're talking about. Why are we tempted with evil is the question. Each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires. Okay, his own desires to do evil is what it's talking about here. So we're not talking about desires to do good. God tells us to covet that which is good. So we're drawn away by our own desires to do evil, and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, in other words, we can be drawn away, and there's no sin. We are shown by God what our desires are that are good and what are bad, that are bad, by God's Holy Spirit. That's not sin. So we can have a thought based on a desire that is wrong, but that's where, through God's Spirit, it can be nipped in the bud, or God will show us, no, and it doesn't blossom. So we can have a seed, we can have a bud, but we don't want those buds to blossom. We don't want conception to take place. So we know the difference between a seed and conception. So we have a seed that is a wrong desire. We don't want it to become a full baby, right? So when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. So we ask the question, what is really the cause of sin? When I sin, why did I sin? And the answer is, I sinned because I had an evil desire. There's no way I could have sinned if I didn't have that evil desire. Has to start somewhere, and as the Introduction to Criminal Minds states, it starts in the mind. It starts in our mind. And Satan can do nothing with it. He cannot do anything with he does everything with the wrong desire. He can't do anything if we don't have an evil desire, right? So if it comes to smoking, so someone smoking around with me, or someone comes up and says, have a cigarette. Now, doesn't bother me one bit, because I have no desire to smoke. Just the smell of smoke just turns me off, and as most of us, we would cough. Now, if someone smoked in the past at all, there still can be that desire because they haven't overcome it yet. And I have heard of people who've not smoked for 20 years and they still say, you know, that smell of smoke there's just something about it that I like. Now, I like the smell of gasoline myself, but I'm not going to drink it. That's for sure. But I still remember as a kid, my uncle filling up, actually maybe it was diesel that I like. He was filling up the tractors, you know, and I thought, nice, but not so good. Have I drunk any diesel lately? I think the closest would be sorghum. You know, you don't hear sorghum too often, but this fellow grew garbanzo and beans or something and sorghum, he said. And that's interesting. It's pretty good for you, I think. Not too much. But anyway, again, back to the subject. We have to think always, if we sin, then start meditating. This is what God wants us to do. We meditate on the law of God. That's what he says in the Psalms. And we sing this on a regular basis. We meditate on God's law. And when we meditate on why did I sin? Go back to an evil desire. Any sin. It doesn't matter what sin it is. It's an evil desire. And we all have to work those machinations of the process out in our mind, don't we? But we need to do it. We need to do it. We can't just let it go because we are striving against sin. Going on here in verse 16 and 17. Notice what it says. Now, this is interesting because it's still on the subject of sin. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Now, what do we mean by that? It just talked about sin and the desires and conceiving, you know, conceiving and giving birth. What does it mean, don't be deceived? Don't be deceived about what? Don't be deceived about your evil desire. It's no good. It's not perfect and it's no good, is what he goes on to say. Notice, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. You may have to wait for it. So be patient, okay, and don't have an evil desire because it's no good. Don't be deceived. The evil desire is not perfect. The evil desire is not good. It's not going to get us anywhere. It's not going to benefit us. It's not good for really the short term, and it's not good for the long term. So any sin, any evil desire that leads to sin is not good. That's why he said, don't be deceived. Now, our evil desires seem to be good because they seem to be something that will, you know, lift us up, or something that will make us feel like we accomplished something when we yelled at somebody and got it off our chest. Or people say, if you're really angry, you know, set up a big boxing bag, you know, those punch bags that you have that hang down from the ceiling, and you can go out there, and if you're really upset, put the gloves on, some leather gloves on, and start punching away, and you're going to feel better. They have proven that that actually makes you worse. Because you're letting off steam, but you're hitting something. It's no good. It doesn't make us feel better. So yelling never helps. Never helps. When we yelled at the kids, when I yelled at the kids, Marion was not a yeller at all, and I didn't yell that much. I was trying to think the other day when I was with the kids how many times I yelled at them, and we definitely came up with four. Those would be, you know, really loud, you know. Kids come here, it didn't count. But, and we never took God's name in vain. We feared God too much to do that. No habits in the church. But still, you know, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Well, it was not good at all. So we see then again that God tells us to make sure that we recognize that it comes from within, and that's not going to be any good at all. And I was going to say, when I did yell at the kids, I didn't feel good. I didn't feel good. It's like, oh, you know, why did I do that? What was aggravating me? And it usually wasn't something that I was mad at with the kids. It was just something else, you know. Okay, James 1. In verse 16, it says, don't be deceived. Temptations to do wrong are not good. Let's go on to the third point. Knowledge does not deliver us from sin, okay? So we are striving against sin. Now, what knowledge can we gain? When we meditate on sin, knowledge is necessary. We have to know what sin is, but knowledge won't deliver us. We just came through the days of unleavened bread, and we can say that knowledge of leaven does not create unleavened bread, does it? The knowledge of leaven does not create unleavened bread. Not at all. So that means that, well, there's overcome evil with good. And there are sins of omission and sins of commission. So normally when you start looking at it, if you have a sin of commission, the only way to overcome a sin of commission, which is you're knowledgeable of what you did, but you have to have you have to do something. I may have that twisted around, but you all know what I mean. You have to do good to overcome evil. That is what God wants us to do. So knowledge isn't good enough. Let's go to basically just one chapter where Paul covers this, Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7, starting out in verse 9. Okay, I was alive once without the law, but when the commandment came, okay, this is knowledge, sin revived, and I died. So Paul, who was raised with the law, didn't understand the full spirit of the law. He memorized the Ten Commandments, I'm sure, as we all do. We know the Ten Commandments. You might get a couple out of order, but still, you know the Ten Commandments. And that's knowledge. So he had knowledge then. When the commandment came, sin revived. So just because I have knowledge of the Ten Commandments, does sin go away? And the answer is no. In fact, we could go through the Ten Commandments every single day. And he said, sin revived and I died. In other words, the more he knew about it, just knowledge of the law itself, I understood that I sinned. That's what he said. The commandment, which was to bring life, I found to bring death. For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, deceived me and by it killed me. Now we ask the question, what became death, the law or the transgression of the law? This chapter is one that's a little bit hard to understand for those in the world. They usually use it to get rid of God's law. Because they say, well, if the law comes and sin revives, just throw it out. Get rid of it. And we have grace through Christ. And he is our Sabbath now, for example. Or can we say he is our stealing and he is our adultery and he is our covetousness and he is our, and it's like, well, if he's our Sabbath, then he has to be our, if he is our keep the Sabbath day, then he is our thou shalt not steal, even if we steal. How foolish that becomes. But the question is then, is the law death or is transgression of the law death? And the answer for all of us is transgression of the law is death. And this is what it's saying here. Verse 11, sin. Now, the law is not sin, but sin took occasion by the commandment. Now, what sin was that? Well, we're going to see it was the law of sin. The law of sin that was in Paul took occasion by the commandment and deceived him, and by it killed me. Then he comes back and says the law is holy, so the law is not sin, and the commandment is holy and just and good. Has then what is good become death to me? And he says, well, no. But sin, coming back, he makes a very pointed proclamation here. Sin is the problem. That it might appear sin was producing death in me through what is good. Now, if you don't have anything good out there at all, if there is no law, then you can't have sin because sin is the transgression of the law, right? We're all following me. If there's no stop sign, you go through the stop sign, the policeman picks you up and says you broke the law, and you say, well, what law? Well, you were supposed to stop, and you said, there was no stop sign. So you broke no law, right? So it's the same way with God's law. If there's no law, you can't sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. I still remember Mr. Armstrong making such a strong point on that years ago, and I wondered, well, why is he emphasizing that so much? Because you would think that everybody would have read 1 John 3 and would know that sin is the transgression of the law, but the world doesn't. They don't think in those terms at all. Sin is the transgression of the law. It's such a simple key point that all of us know and understand, but the world doesn't. And I guarantee you, we will be teaching all of our millennial audience as they sit in the front rows, maybe 1,000 strong or 300 strong. I hope it's only a small church of 300 or 200 or whatever. And we'll be teaching in a loving manner what sin is. And we'll say, look, it's the sins that have been the problem. Sin. So knowledge is not good enough. There is a law of sin. So he goes on to say in verse 24, and maybe I should back up just a little bit here, verse 23 of the same chapter. I see a law in my members, and it's warring against the law of my mind, and it's bringing me into captivity to a law called the law of sin, which is in my members. A law of sin that is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of death, from this body of death? And then he gives the answer. Look, we can have all the knowledge in the world. We can understand all the commandments, but unless Jesus Christ is in us, and that's one of the lessons of the Days of Unleavened Bread, when we eat the bread, in John 6 also, when we eat of he that eats my flesh and drinks my blood has no life in him. So we must have the mind of Christ, must have that mind. It's some of these energy drinks, you know, that you read about in sports magazines, Gatorade, cut it in half with water, by the way, there's too much sugar in it. It's one of these sports drinks, you know, but you get these energy drinks and they have, like 20 cups worth of caffeine in it, you know, and then usually taurine, which is another energy builder, and maybe, L-arginine and some of these other proteins, you know, that get into your heart and they give you the ATP energy that you need to be a super athlete, just like Bruce Jenner. Oh, wait a minute. He's not a super athlete anymore, is he? But you know what I mean. And it's like you take this stuff and it can kill people, but they take it to get energy to do what is formidable. You know, it's so hard to do. And some of it works. I didn't say L-carnitine, did I? Or creatine. Creatine is what it is that a lot of these guys use. And it gives them the energy. Well, what gives us the strength to be delivered from the law of sin? Well, the mind of Christ, bottom line. It is the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit that is in us gives us that strength. And we talked about that strength yesterday, so I won't go on, but we must have same strength, and we must have the faith that just as God was able to deliver Israel, physical Israel, out of sin, he's much more interested in bringing us to glory, the sons of God to glory, isn't he? Just as Mr. Frank said. Is he not going to supply us strength if we ask? So which is greater, our desire, our evil desire, and this is what comes down to it, is our desire for evil greater than our desire to call on God for help? That's the way I look at it. I mean, what is it? Do I have such a desire to do what I want to do that I'm not even going to call on God because I want to do this so badly? Whether it's yelling at somebody, whether it's resentment, whether it's revenge, and we're not even talking about the letter of the law, we're talking about the spirit of the law. So where do we get our kicks? And it has to be kicks out of self-control, kicks out of patience, kicks out of forbearance. They're the tough ones, aren't they? Now, with all of us, as we strive against sin, we have to make this one commitment. We have to make the commitment, I am not going to sin once. This is a commitment we must make every single day. If we give ourselves any space at all, brethren, we're going to sin. We just will. We have to start today with, I will not sin. I will pull all stops on righteousness, and I'll put all stops in the ground, keep them in the ground when it comes to sin. I'll have a lot of stop signs around. But that has to be our mindset all the time. I am not going to sin today. That will keep us from the start of these evil desires. Even an evil desire has a start. And the sooner we can, fine, just get, you know, call on God, the sooner the better, let it go a little bit, and it's starting to sprout just a little bit, and it's going to get harder. That's just the way it is. And then we take the fall, right? So, a commitment, not one sin. We can't allow ourselves one sin, not even one, because now we're in a wrong spirit. So you can commit one sin and God says we bring the whole penalty on us. One little sin is just as big as, and people talk about a little white lie. Never hear of a little white lie? Well, any lie that is a false witness against our brethren or against anybody, anything that, any lie that's going to hurt someone is never white, right? Or any lie that really affects our character is never white. So we can't allow ourselves anything small. Now, we'll sin because we grow in knowledge. We'll sin because experience comes along, okay? We need experience sometimes to know that we sinned. So sometimes we won't know. We'll sin ignorantly, and we read that in the Old Testament that there were sacrifices for sins of ignorance. But still, we have to have that commitment. If we start a day and kind of don't worry about it, Father, forgive me of my sins, and kind of go on the day, and then we get up from praying and we get irritated right away, and you know, which can happen, but we set our mind, and it's going to happen a lot less, I guarantee you that, because we're going to be vigilant is the word. We're going to be very vigilant, and vigilance is what God tells us to be. Be vigilant because Satan the devil is out there, and he wants us to trip up. He just glories in that. He wants us to make mistakes. So strive against sin. Hebrews chapter 12, last chapter that I'm going to. Hebrews chapter 12. We need to strive against sin. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. And this chapter is coming off Hebrews 11, where it's telling us that we must endure, and we have all of these witnesses who've lived before us who've set us a tremendous example. And they've shown that they would suffer for righteousness' sake. They would go through whatever they needed to go through, and they would have faith in God, because it's about endurance through faith in God. We can't have endurance, and that starts in Hebrews 10, but we can't have endurance without the faith that comes from God himself. So therefore, we also, verse 1 of Hebrews 12, we also, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of those witnesses that have come before us, let's lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. See what sin is? It's a sin easily ensnares us. These are traps that are set by Satan the devil. And we step in them, and they snap. So let us run with endurance, because if we're going to run with endurance, you sure don't want to have weights on. Now, for training, some athletes, they'll hook themselves to a parachute, and they'll run, you know, and the wind will... They'll catch the wind, and it'll be pulling on them, and they'll be gaining strength. Or they'll put weights in their shoes, or they tie weights around their ankles. And overall, you don't want to do that. You can, you know, run some hills, but overall, maybe the parachute will work. But I've read these reports where, just get the weight off. You know, run in your bare feet. Take your shoes off. Go get out in some grass and just run. If you want to... If you want to run fast, then you want that brain to get used to the turnover speed. You know, as fast as you can get those little feet of ours moving, that's the way to run. And if you want endurance, then you have to get rid of weight. You don't want any weight on you at all. And sin is a weight. And if we have sin, it'll pull us down. And Satan is going to watch us closely. Very closely, and he's from a distance. God doesn't just let him get up close. We can resist him, but from a distance, he is able to see what tempts us. And then he'll come in. It's just like a lion going after the weak. In most cases, I've heard in some cases they don't always go after the weak, but in most cases they go after the stragglers. And, Satan will look at any weakness we have, and then he'll go after it. So we have to judge ourselves, get rid of the weaknesses that we have, and all of us have them, so that Satan will stay away. We resist Satan that way by judging ourselves first and foremost. And that way, what is he going to go to God for? He's going as a prosecuting attorney every single day. And if he goes before God and God says, well, what do you have on Greg Sargent? You know, I've been watching him from a distance, and sadly, God, I couldn't find anything today. Now, hopefully I'm not a Job where God says, but wouldn't it be nice if Satan had nothing on us? He doesn't read our mind. I don't believe he does. I don't believe Satan reads our mind. Only God reads our mind. So we know what we are fighting. We always know what we're fighting, and we never think we stand lest we fall. So we should never have that attitude that there's nothing, you know, that caused me problems today. But we set aside every weight. And then verse 2, look to Jesus Christ, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. So it takes endurance, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners. We had a sermonette on that recently. What did Jesus Christ go through? Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself. Now we're bringing in, well, wait a minute. That person may, if it weren't for them, they provoke me. When I'm around that person, they're just always provoking me. Hopefully it's not your husband or wife, because you live with them. They're always provoking me. Well, even then, endured such hostility from sinners against himself. Hostility. My husband is always leaving his underwear, never picking it up. That's a lot of hostility, isn't it? We get so upset at little things. That's not hostility. What makes us upset is nothing, usually, is it? Not really. Not at all. Unless your son changed the oil on the car and didn't put new oil in and drove it 50 miles. That's close. Our son didn't do that. Our son did pull the plug one time and then decided to drive the car up on the risers. After he pulled, he actually didn't pull the plug on the oil. He took the oil filter off and then drove it up. A lot of oil spilled on the driveway. I still remember saying, Dean, you need any help? No, Dad, I got it. He was about 16, 17. And he got it all right all over the driveway. But that's still not hostility. I mean, even that, what hostility is that? So if we can't make it in good times, brethren, how can we make it in really rough times? We have to look at it that way. We can't let little things upset us. It's no big thing. It's not hostility. But if we are building self-control through these little things, which are helpful, I mean, we will be having to bear with little things. We will be. But it's all building character so that when the big problems come along, and which they do from time to time, then we can overcome those. So we consider Jesus Christ, lest we become weary and discouraged in our souls. And this is what we have to be careful of. You've not resisted the bloodshed striving against sin. So in most cases, is it that hard? And the answer is, well, it can be if we let it. But in most cases, it's not big enough. But even then, God says, strive against sin. Doesn't matter what it is, really. Whatever the problem is that we are upset with is big enough to be a problem, right? If it's big enough in our mind, it's big enough to be a problem. We still have to overcome it, and it is a growing process. So whatever we must strive against, let's strive against it. So verse 28, let's go right to the end of the chapter. Since we're receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, we have a lot, and this is what Jesus Christ looked to in verse 2, the joy that was set before him. We have a kingdom which cannot be shaken that will last for all eternity, and as spirit beings, we will be in that kingdom. Then let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. In a good way, not in a bad way. Our God is a consuming fire. Our God is powerful and great. And let's look forward to serving Him. So I hope this helps. Many ways of tackling every single subject. And you've heard these things before. We probably have heard the scriptures before. But brethren, let's strive to not sin once. It's going to help. We have to start there. Let's strive to not sin even once.